It's not real clear in the
legislation. So it will be a fresh and interesting bill. So you know, if they have aired some of the other interests.
It's 6:45 p.m. Call this meeting to order for Land and Natural Resource and Culture Preservation Committee, January 17, 2017. Invocation, Mr. Randolph, would you offer that for us this evening?
Lord, we're thankful for another day. We're thankful for all your blessings, for your love and your grace and your mercy, Lord. I ask that you clear our minds, that you touch us in our hearts and our spirits, Lord. Guide and direct us in all that we do. I ask that you be in our midst today, tonight, as we go through the proceedings of this meeting. Say all these things in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Next we have is roll call, Hazy.
Daryl Proctor.
Here.
Mark Randolph.
Here.
Dale Beaver.
Here.
Thomas Yehola.
Here.
Mitch Jack. Chairman, I got four present, one absent.
Four present, one absent. Constitutes quorum, and any business transacted this evening will be official. Next we have is approval of minutes for December 6, 2016 and December 13, 2016. Give the committee time to review and ask for a motion.
Chairman, I make a motion to accept the minutes with any necessary changes.
Motion made by Mark Randolph to accept the minutes with any necessary changes. Seconded by Dale Beaver. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Next we have is an order of business. TR-17-004, tribal resolution of Muscogee Creek Nation authorizing Principal Chief to execute a separate memorandum of understanding with two public schools for the maintenance of parking lots, roadways repaired or constructed by Muscogee Creek Nation Tribal Transportation Program. Sponsors, Dale Beaver.
Chairman, I make a motion to pass.
Motion for due pass by Dale Beaver.
Second.
Seconded by Mark Randolph. Any discussion?
Necessary paperwork to submit to the federal government to add routes to our inventory so we can work on these routes in the future. That's the first step in being able to make improvements. So this first one is an MOU with two public schools. The big one is Beggs Public School. We're building a walking track where we'll begin construction probably next week, and we'll build a parking lot next to it when it's finished. And much like we did at Morris for the walking trail there. And I believe the other one's Dewar, if my memory serves me correct. I don't. Mm-hmm. Oh, Bixby.
Bixby.
Thank you.
Any questions? Any questions, Thomas?
No.
No questions? Dale? Mark? Hearing none, roll call vote.
Dale Beaver?
Yes.
Thomas Yahola?
Yes.
Mark Randolph?
Yes.
Chairman, I got 3 in favor, 0 against.
3 in favor, 0 against. That motion passes. Next item we have is TR17-005. Tribal resolution of School Creek Nation authorizing the principal chief to execute a separate memorandum of understanding with 6 Oklahoma counties for the maintenance of roadways, bridges, and associated rights of way constructed or improved by the Muscogee Creek Tribal Transportation Program. Sponsors Dale Beaver.
Chairman, I make a motion to pass.
Motion for due pass by Dale Beaver.
Second.
Seconded by Mark Randolph. Any discussion? Yes, Kirk.
Okay. This is very similar. The last one was with public schools. This one is with the counties. For new routes that we're wanting to add to our inventory.
New routes. Mm-hmm. You said there were 6, total of 6 on this one?
Yeah, 6 counties.
Mm-hmm. Any questions?
Yes. Yeah, I've got a question on Seminole County. We have route number 2004 and 2009 with the school. And looking at your map, I can't place where these are at.
It did kind of dark, didn't it?
Where routes in Seminole County is it?
So we just have, it's right up in the northeast corner. See right there, this map did print off dark when they copied it, but there's talking about a section. So I think this is one right here. I think it's right. Yeah, there it is. There's one right here on this section line.
Okay. So I understand, you know, this, but whereabouts is it? I mean, I don't know. I know what the town they're in. All that is, but I don't know what the route is. I see here, but I don't know what this landmark here is. Is it near Bearden, or is it south of Bearden, or north of Bearden, or east of Cromwell, or where?
Here's where 56 intersects with 40. And so it's just north of 40, right there. Just north of the intersection.
Oh, okay. Okay, I see now. So around here, is this where the land and trust is over north of Cromwell?
Oh, they just cleared out, I believe. That may be the intersection.
Yeah, well, is this where you make the exit off of I-40? And right here is the tribal, where the smoke shop used to be?
I believe it is.
Is that it right there?
I believe so, sir.
Okay. And so, okay, that road, and then it just goes north?
Yes, sir.
It's 4 miles. 4 miles north?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay, I see where it is now.
I'm sorry, I printed Officer Darth in the copy.
Well, okay.
It is hard to see.
Yeah, I see it now. Yeah, I know where the smoke shop is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just off I-40.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where it is. Right there.
What highway or what are they calling that road there?
This is
56 here. Oh, okay. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, it turns off, goes this way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, now, my next question is that in Seminole County, where is that little quasi proposed road? Is it ever coming up? That's what I thought this one here was.
I believe that is in the inventory, the
okay.
Sardi Road.
Okay. Okay, I know where it is. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any more questions?
No.
Questions? No questions? Roll call vote.
Del Beaver.
Yes.
Thomas Shaholo.
Yes.
Mark Randolph.
Yes.
Chairman, I got 3 in favor, 0 against.
3 in favor, 0 against. That motion passes. Next item we have is TR17-006, a tribal resolution of the Muscogee Creek Nation authorizing the principal chief to execute a separate memorandum of understanding with 4 Oklahoma cities for the maintenance of roadways, bridges, and associated rights of way constructed or improved by the Muscogee Creek Nation Tribal Transportation Program. Sponsors, Del Beaver.
Chairman, I make a motion to do pass.
Motion for do pass by Del Beaver.
Second.
Seconded by Mark Randolph. Discussion. Kirk.
It's the same as the previous two. It's a memorandum of understanding with the city so that we can work on these outlined routes.
Okay. Any questions on these? Roll call vote.
Del Beaver?
Yes.
Thomas Shaholo?
Yes.
Mark Randolph?
Yes.
Chairman, I got 3 in favor, 0 against.
3 in favor, 0 against. That motion passes. Next item we have is TR17-007, a tribal resolution of the Muscogee Creek Nation approving the Muscogee Creek Nation Long Range Transportation Plan with addition of routes identified in the Long Range Transportation Plan. The sponsor is Del Beaver.
Chairman, I make a motion to pass.
Motion for due pass by Del Beaver.
Second.
Seconded by Mark Randolph. Discussion. Yes.
Okay. Another part of the inventory process is every 5 years, or roughly, the tribe prepares and submits a long-range transportation plan of what we intend to do for the next 5 years. And any time that we add a route that we didn't have the foresight to include in the previous long-range transportation plan, then we make an amendment to it and add those routes in there. So we're just revising the long-range transportation plan. It's probably 4 inches thick. It's a big document.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are just the amended sheets in here so that we can add the routes from the 3 previous tribal resolutions.
Oh, okay. Any questions?
Just go ahead.
Yes, Dale.
on this long-range transportation plan. So does it keep getting bigger, or does it shrink and then kind of stay the same size, or does it get smaller?
It changes every time. As we construct projects, then that drops off of the long-range transportation plan, and as new needs come up, then that's added to it. So it's a constantly changing thing. Every 5 years, it's a little different. It stays about the same thickness.
Same thickness. So really, you don't learn how to work then, right? Within that 5 years, is that your goal, I guess, to get everything done that's in that plan within 5 years? Or is it just adding the work to what you need to do?
It's adding to it. It takes a lot of time to do a project. Mm-hmm. It really does. I know I went to a ribbon cutting ceremony for a bridge. I was invited to attend the ribbon cutting just this past week. They'd been working on it 10 years from the time they first asked for the funds, just to get all the, they used federal money like we use federal money. And it took them 10 years to get through all the bureaucratic red tape. And so it took 10 years to get to, it probably took less than a year to build the bridge. It took probably 9 years to get all the approval by the right of way and all the. So the 5-year plan, we won't do everything in that 5-year long range plan, but it just spells out the routes that we want to do work on in the future.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Mark? Okay. Go ahead, Thomas.
Yes. Going over your inventory, I was looking at three of these here, Lamar North Road, Alabama West Road, and Ranch Creek Road. And if you look at those legal descriptions, you have 18 North. 18 North is up in Creek County. Hughes County is 9 North and 10 North. And we have 18 North, which puts it up around Creek County.
Okay.
So that legal description is in there.
Okay.
Those three anyway.
Okay. I will definitely look into that. These may be ones that have been in there.
Yes,
for a while in the inventory.
Yes, but you got Hughes County there, yeah. And Hughes County is not in that particular township.
If you make a note of those three, then I'll be sure to check on that.
Hearing none, roll call vote.
Bill Beaver.
Yes.
Thomas Shahola.
Yes.
Mark Randolph.
Yes.
Cameron got 3 in favor, 0 against.
3 in favor, 0 against. It. Motion passes.
Thank you.
Next item we have is TR17-008, a tribal resolution of the Muscogee Creek Nation authorizing the adoption of a collection management policy for the Muscogee Creek Nation Cultural Center and Archives Department. Sponsor is Del Beaver.
Chairman, make a motion to do pass.
Motion for do pass by Del Beaver.
Second.
Seconded by Mark Randolph. Any discussion?
It's about 10.
Collection management policy has kind of been a working document for about a year and a half.
This is the updated one.
Yeah, there's just an updated one. And it's in short order, basically just discusses the administrative policies for taking things into the collection taking them out of the collection, care and procedure of collection items, designation of different types of collections within the Culture Center and Archives, and any sort of technical care and use of the collection, what's ethical, and what kind of ethics are decide what gets done and how the collection is used and accessed.
Any questions? Dale?
Yes, I have one. Ms. Paxton, if this document is passed and signed off by the chief and it becomes the document that governs, you know, the collection management, is the Cultural Center and Archives, I'm assuming your department is equipped to handle everything that's in here, that all your responsibilities that's outlined in this, your department's equipped to handle all these responsibilities?
Currently, as even with the temporary space in which we're located, we have equipped it so that things are being stored according to museum standards. The humidity, relative humidity and temperature is being regulated and monitored. We've purchased equipment to do all that. And we have a functioning collections advisory committee that's been meeting, I think about a year now. And so we have taken things in, kind of testing it to making sure that all the pieces are working together and how they should be. And so, yes, confident that we can upkeep this and do the inventory when needed. We're still working on updating the catalog, of course, but that's kind of pretty typical in any museum collection is the catalog work is never done. So,
thank you.
Mark. Any questions from the committee? No questions. Roll call vote.
Bill Beaver?
Yes.
Thomas Shahola?
Yes.
Mark Randall?
Yes.
Chairman, got 3 in favor, 0 against.
3 in favor, 0 against. That motion passed. Next item we have is PR 17-009, a tribal resolution of the Muscogee Creek Nation authorizing the Muscogee Creek Nation Tribal Construction Service to utilize the state contractors buying cooperative when purchasing vehicles, trailers, and equipment for tribal construction services. Sponsor is Thomas Shahola.
Motion for
due pass by Thomas Shahola.
Second.
Seconded by Dale Beaver. Any discussion?
This would just allow the tribal construction to utilize the state contractors buying co-op. We'll get better prices for equipment that we're going to need for our department.
All right. Any questions? Hearing none, roll call vote.
Thomas Shahola?
Yes.
Mark Randolph?
Yes.
Bill Beaver?
Yes.
Chairman, got 3 in favor, 0 against.
3 in favor, 0 against. That motion passes. Next item we have is PR 17-012, a tribal resolution of the Muscogee Creek Nation authorizing the Muscogee Creek Nation Cultural Center and Archives Department to release certain collection items to Melba and Shakota Eads and Doretta Lee Shakota. Sponsor is Mark Randolph.
Motion for due pass.
Motion for due pass by Mark Randolph.
Second.
Seconded by Dale Beaver. We're in discussion.
I've been corresponding with Ms. Eads for maybe 2 years now. The family, there are certain items that they would like to reclaim, which included some diaries and some personal letters. She had explained to me that her aunt, Marianne Kane, was in possession of these things. She had become homeless. Her father was in the service. She stayed at Newtown Church. And there was a chest that was taken over to the council house. Her claim is that they weren't donated. She says they were absorbed. And at one time, I think she had talked to Second Chief Alfred Berryhill. She had talked to Mr. Anderson. She had spoke with Chief Tiger. Chief Tiger had instructed Roger Wiley, our Attorney General at the time, to hire a lawyer for the family to recover these items in question. But in that time, we purchased them back. And Ms. Eve states that was the understanding that they were going to be returned to her, these items they're talking about in question. And so we have kind of like a line of never anything that I've seen so much documented to say they was going to return it, but always their word. They've been telling her. And Mrs. Kane, the lady that they're wanting, it's really one of the diaries. She's 89 years old. She's in a nursing home now. She wants to see these things. And so the last time Ms. Eads was here, they came down, and her understanding was she was coming down to pick up these items. She found out that they would not be released. And so I was called into the matter to do legislation to see what we could do. And that's where we're at right now, to see if these items can be returned to the family. And I was told by Mr. Asbell today that there's some more information that you could share with us. Appreciate it.
Yes, Mark, if you can look.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I think there is a long history of this issue, a fairly long history, dating back to the CIMA, dating back to in the 20s, whenever some of the items were actually donated. That's the documentation that we have. I think it's it took us, Veronica, a long time to try to identify these documents. But there's also a question of whether or not there's multiple heirs. Some of the heirs to the items do not want the items returned. Some of them do. So I think the issue probably raised was accelerated by the fact that the CIMA tried to sell some of the items back, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. When they attempted to do that, it brought a lot of these emotions to the forefront, and I think that's probably when she really decided she wanted this stuff back, because it felt like maybe some of these things were going to be lost. Veronica, if you could speak to some of the things that you've located in terms of the documentation, mm-hmm. what your recommendation would be.
So that's kind of where I've been trained in this collection management policy, is going through and trying to figure out what the documentation currently is on some of these items. And as you can see, I had to dig through like an old card catalog that we just recently found. This dates back to obviously before computers, and so but I did find some of these items listed in there, and then some of them are undocumented, but it is going to take some more time to kind of go down this list and discern these things. If you'll look, I wish I'd made some more copies of these, but on these card catalogs, they give a short description of the item. Then down here it says donor, and it says Samuel Chakoti Jr. and family. One thing that I didn't bring are card catalogs of other objects that were very most certainly loaned, because they say loan very large on the card or on the back of it. This was loaned and needs to be returned to so-and-so. And none of the items that I found that have the Chakoti name on them have that loan designation on them. And I do apologize for not finding these any earlier, but it's just kind of looking through boxes and finding things as we go. So then we have things in our digital catalog. And yes, there are some things that there's no donor listed. For example, this photo of Martin Chakoti doesn't have any sort of transfer of title or deed information on it. But then there are things that are photographs of that are older, you know, date back pre-1900, that say that they were donated by Edna Morton Wales, that are photos of the Chakoti family, and there are several of those. So there are various donors for some of these items, and then some things are undocumented. And so just kind of going through all of these things to find exactly which items they're speaking of is the first thing that we've been trying to do is get just actually a list. And so I took the broad stroke of anything with the Chakotay name on it, and that's kind of what I've come up with here in these records. And so as you can see, this is our digital catalog, and then these are things that need to be added to the digital catalog. But all of the things here say that the donor is indeed the Chakotay family. The sword, this is the sword that's in question. There's no indication that there's a loan on it. So that's kind of what I'd found in the documentation we have. Our collection management policy, if you'll look, there is a section, and this, again, this part of the collection management policy is fairly standard fare for museums. It's basically, you know, pretty orthodox museum practice. Does include a request for return of objects, and a process is outlined for that, which kind of includes that the claimant has to provide a list of things. If you'll look at page 8, and it says the return of objects to the original donor shall only be considered if title is determined to still rest with the donor. That's on about the second paragraph under request for return of collection objects. Then the last sentence in that first paragraph says donated objects shall not be returned to original donors. That's just standard museum practice. And so that was my biggest question in my correspondence with them, is what was the nature of the transaction of these items? Were they old loans? Were they undocumented property? Because those are very legal definitions that mean different things. And so this is all the documentation I have to go off of when I look through the catalog, is that it does say it's a donor, and in situations of loans, those are very much designated as loans. And in this case, there doesn't seem to be.
And I think to add to that is, in the collection management policy is generally referring to donors. So this is not actually, she's not actually the donor. They would be the heir of the donor. Mm-hmm. And that would be, that's also a point of contention with multiple family members, some siding with the nation saying we'd like to keep it with the nation, mm-hmm. and then her being an heir of a donor saying that she wants the objects back. So I think would be our recommendation would be not to return the items. Then what would happen, I think this has been a very long process, and she at that point, by this denial, would be exhausting her administrative remedies with the nation. And we would, if she wants to, she could file a lawsuit at that point if she wanted the items returned. It would be take a court of law to basically order us to return the items. We don't want to set a precedent, create a slippery slope for us to, when people on a whim, maybe they're mad at the nation, or they have a bad experience with one of the departments or whatever, that they change their mind on things and all of a sudden they want us to feel compelled to return items. And so it's kind of not the nature of the museum business, but we want to do what's right, and we will do what's at the discretion of the National Council, of course. So, but that's just our assessment. I think that would be the assessment of the Attorney General as well.
And as Chris had mentioned too, a lot of these things, it does say the date in which they were accessioned. So many of them go back to the 1930s. So that also, because of the large amount of time that's passed, also increases the number of potential heirs for these items. And really, it's more, if you come down to it, it's more of a property issue and a title issue, is to say, I can no more, or the nation can no more give this back to you we can't figure out if it actually belongs to you, or if it belongs to 12 people in the same way, right, as land is handled or anything else. And so because we are liable if we do and we don't give it back to the proper person. So kind of figuring that out is going to take some time, because there obviously are many errors because of the large amount of time that's passed.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. Yes, Mark.
I know Mr. Nichols has worked on this longer than I have and been acquainted with the family. Would you like to take something, Mr. Nichols?
Yes, sir, I would. Thank you. To my knowledge, Ms. Kane, the elder, she is now residing in a nursing home in Omagi, and I'll kind of go mixed up here. She was asked by the Attorney General to get some type of proof that Ms. Kane owned these items at one time, or they were in her possession, and if she would sign something to that effect, and she did. To my knowledge, Ms. Kane told me these things were never donated to the Muskogee Nation, for the Muskogee Council House. They were put there for safekeeping. Her grandfather died in the early 50s, and they were taken down to Newtown Church and put in a camp house, stored there at the camp house. Well, things became to be missing. Things started being missing out of the boxes down there. So it was recommended by a person that they be taken to the council house for safekeeping. But and they were stored in a closet up there. And in the meantime, when they were there, things came up missing from there. There were some pistols from one of the wars that Mr. Chakota had that came up missing. They were never recovered. Mary Ann just wants to see these items, which they are of a personal, you know, effect, because they're all about her grandfather. Her grandfather, notes, diaries, graduation certificates when he became a preacher, certificates for that. He made daily diaries. He wrote things every day of what he did in his life. And, you know, what good are they to the Muskogee Nation? They were lost at one time. The tribe let them go. And I was a big part of that, of the recovery for these things at one time when I was served as a council representative. I went to the council house one day and to look around, and they were wrapping everything up and storing everything. I said, "What are you doing?" They said, "We were told by one of Chief Tiger's associates to remove all the objects, get them out of here. So that's what we're doing." I said, "Was there any type of a negotiation to, you know, leave these things here, recover them?" They said, "We made phone calls and we wrote letters, but no correspondence back to us. And once they told us to remove everything, that's what we're doing." Well, in the meantime, the Association for the Creek Nation decided they didn't need them, so they contacted an auctioneer somewhere on the East Coast. So we're all pretty much everyone here is familiar with that. Mr. Beaver may not be. But they were lost. They were gone. Everything. So Ms. Chacot, she just became totally just upset, and she called me and she said, "Is there anything we can do to get these items back?" And I said, "We can try. That's all I can promise is we can try." So I contacted Rusty Milbourne. He was the chairman of the association, and he was real rude to me. And he said, "These things are in our possession. The nation didn't want to, you know, talk about retaining them or anything, so we're getting rid of them." And he hung up. Well, you know, I felt that I wasn't going to give up. So I retained the names of other associated members and started calling them. And I was talking to some ladies, and I said, "You know, I wish you'd, you know, take a little time to think about what you've done and what's going to happen. You know, you're going to disrupt some things for the tribe, for the nation, for citizens. There's personal items there." And I said, "Well, how would you feel if your family's personal items were just totally taken away and auctioned off?" And these ladies began to talk to me a little bit more, and I guess they started talking to Mr. Milroy. And he called me back, and he said, "Well, we'll call, but it's going to cost to get them back. We can't get them back for nothing." Then Chief Tiger became involved. He kind of took it from there and started negotiating with, I guess, the association with the auctioneer on the East Coast. And it's a shame that we ended up giving $200,000 back for them. I believe that's what the cost was, and we shouldn't have to do that. We should have retained them in the beginning. But they were returned, and I think Ms. Chacot had been told many times by David Anderson, the administrator there, that he would work with her to get these things returned. In fact, he gave her some maps. When she was working on a deal for the church, Newtown Church, he gave her some maps to go over and, you know, put in her work. Second Chief Berryhill said he would work with her and get him retained. Well, both of them had passed since then. I believe Chief Tiger, as was mentioned by Mr. Randolph here, that he was going to get a lawyer, but that was to help her get him from the auctioneer. You know, try to get him from the auctioneer, because they didn't think they were going to get anything back. So that's where Mr. Tiger was coming in, to help her retain a lawyer to get him back from the auctioneer if possible. Then I believe even Mr. Floyd, Chief Floyd, recently told her that if she would come to Oklahoma, they would be returned to her. So she came from Tennessee, south of Nashville. Her sister came from Austin, Texas, Dodie. And they were here, and once they got here, they made objections to being returned to them. You know, they said they couldn't have them back. I guess Ms. Pipestem, the Attorney General, has some rules to go by and things to follow for the possibility of getting them back, and she felt she did the best she could in the time period that she had, and she would be here tonight, but she couldn't afford two trips in case this made it to the full council. She couldn't afford to get here, you know, tonight and come back in a week, less than a week. But, you know, Mary Ann was the possessor of these items. Mary Ann Kane, she's still living in the nursing home over here on the east side of town. She did sign the paper stating that she would, it's her wishes that Melba and Doty receive these items and that they would bring them to her for her to review and look at much as things as possible. There's a total of 5 to 8 boxes there, apparently. What did you call that a while ago? A case? Not a case, but a...
Like a chest.
A chest that's missing. That's never been seen again. But all in all, they said they were never donated. They were put there for safekeeping. And they were retained in the closet. I never seen them displayed. I went to the council house many times. And the only thing I ever seen of Mr. Schultz was his desk, his chair, and his sword. They don't want them back. They just want the diaries and the letters. You know, and like I say, they're kind of personal. I know there's going to be a lot of things I left out here that I want to say tonight, but...
Let me jump in real quick.
Okay.
For myself, and I think Mr. Proctor should call you also, Ms. Eads, at one time, and Mr. Yohola, and it kind of boils down to, you know, previous folks in our administration have told her, you know, gave them their word, we're going to return these things to you, these certain things. And I think that's why they've held on so long. And for right now, you know, and I understand there's, you know, the legalities and everything, and I don't want to see anything, you know, come back on the nation. But I think we're kind of into a place to where, you know, we can keep our words with this, you know, or we can pretty much hold this stuff hostage from their families. And I would just ask the committee if we could just at least have time, you know, Ms. Eads wants to come down for the full council, if we could just pass it through committee to get it through council so we can look at other things. And I know she's not going to give up, you know, she's real passionate about this. Alicia's worked with her over the phone. Alicia knows too, you know, their stance is that they were not donated. I mean, certain things. I mean, you have, I don't know which ones you're talking about that's donated. I would think that it's specific things that show that's donated. So I'm wondering if all these things, if we could get, I don't even know how much stuff is in there. You know what I mean? And then which is donated, which isn't documented, you know, and see if we can work through there to try to, you know, make everybody happy here. And I do feel for her, and I realize there are other heirs, you know, but here, I guess it was her dad, was it, that just passed this last year?
2 months ago.
Yeah.
3 months ago.
And they were real, he was another one that wanted to see these things, you know, and he was never able to see them, which kind of added to the anguish of the family as far as not being able to see these things or touch them or feel them when they belong to their own grandparents. You know, and for myself, on a personal side, I could see that. If it belonged, was my grandfather, I would want to see these things. I would want to touch these things. And I would feel like it would be up to my family to say what belongs to, you know, who it belongs to. I know that she's been told also in the past that, well, we can make you copies of these things. But then the family stance was, well, we could make them copies, you know. Why wouldn't we have the things that rightfully belong to us? And like Mr. Nichols said, there is a story from Newtown and the way that things were taken over to the council house and things were missing and the pistols and all that. So there's a long history here. And I know it's at least 7 years she's been working on this. And I know we have a policy that's come up today. And when were you able to find these things?
The old card catalogs, these were found in the last week or so, just kind of digging through boxes, and so.
Because, you know, I had no idea about these things until today, you know. Because yesterday we talked to Ms. Eads, and you know, I wasn't able to tell her that either. We were trying to remain optimistic and all that. So that's what I'd like to say. Thank you.
Well, this all started back with Mary Ann meeting me in our driveway. She was a neighbor of mine from the old Chico place. And she came to me one day and asked me if there's a possibility, you know, she wanted these things back herself, Mary Ann, the 80-year-old lady. And the only heir besides her that I know of is her two sons. And I know neither one of them, well, the oldest one said he didn't want nothing to do with it. He don't even take care of the home. The home's falling down right now. It's sad. The other one's in the penitentiary for a long time, you know. He don't care about these things either. I know both of them. I grew up around them all my life. And it's just sad that, you know, Mary Ann, we don't know how long she's going to live. And she wants to see these things. And it was her. She started all this.
I just want to say one thing. I think the beginning of the story is important as well, because these items were moved to a camp house because an individual was homeless at the time.
Yeah.
If those items had not been donated to the CIMA at that time, would they be around today for her heirs and all of us to look at? The value to the diary, the value to the items is not specific in nature to the Cree Nation. The content itself is preserving the culture, preserving the history, and that's what the mission of the organization is. So I think you got to ask yourself, if they had not been donated, if they had not been given to the CIMA to hold, would they be around today? Mm-hmm. That's the idea. Is We know that the Muscogee Cree Nation has made mistakes. We made mistakes on the transition of the CIMA. We made mistakes on the collection transition. I think that's all well documented. I think what we want to do is make sure that we preserve the items that we have today, and that's all we can do. And if the council chooses to give the items back, I think that's fine. I mean, we don't have any heartburn over that either way, but I just want to say that it is our goal is to preserve it, and to preserve it for her heirs, and to preserve it for the heirs that may become interested in those items at a later time.
Thank you, Chairman. I wanted to thank Mrs. Pipestem also. And I disprecede you, you know, I know that. And I know you're just doing what you have to do, and I'm thankful for that. It has nothing to do with that. I think before the administration, as an administration, as a nation, we've got to take some responsibility for holding her off to. Right. There was a lot of times she tried to contact the former person who was the director over there, Mr. Giles, and she would never get answers. You know, they kept asking questions and they kept trying to communicate and open up this dialogue, but they were put off, or they were told, we're going to give you these things, and then they never got it.
Right.
And so that's what complicates everything, makes it so hard here. And that's why it ends up here in front of us. To me, it should have never even had to end up in front of us. They should have been able to work that out. Not that procedure, folks.
It was told this would be the proper way of possibly getting in return, you know, legislation.
Right.
And like I say, I understand your position, Chris's position. But, you know, all in all, what are the nation going to do with them? Continue to store them? You know, once everything is put downtown, they'll probably be stored again, because they were never displayed. They were just stored. And, you know, the family would like to store them and see them and read them and go through them, you know, and things like that. And I don't understand all the ins and outs about how it's legal, illegal, or whatever. I just know there's an elder lady that's not going to live very much longer, and she did sign the paperwork, and I believe Melba is close to Mary Ann. That's why Melba's so involved. They're real close to her. They grew up with her. Even Dodie, he was the one from Texas. And I think they're just about heartbroken. Melba, she admitted she got very upset last time she was here. And, you know, that's not the proper way to go about things. But sometimes people do get upset when, you know, you're told so many things, and then all of a sudden things kind of turn on you again. So, and she made her trip out here. I don't know, just whatever the council believes, you know, believes rights and what they think, I'll just, and she'll be here Saturday if you pass it on to the full council, you know, If you have any more questions or materials you need, she can find us in by Saturday. She told me she would. I spoke with her just before I came, you know. And these items are Mary Ann's father's. They come from her father down through the line of the original Chandler Chakota, you know, Chandler Chakota, principal chief at one time. Okay. And she's so involved, you know, I mean, like, we've always just kind of off the record for a minute. Not off the record, but off subject. She wants to keep the Creek Nation alive in that area, too, you know, the southern regions. And she's done a big part of being involved out there. And, you know, I know it was promised by everybody that run for principal chief that there would be someone to work with all the, you know, what would you call them, distant native Creek citizens. Hopefully that will come to be one day. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. Yes.
That's just I'm certainly, you know, going to echo what Chris said on this, and that's kind of my place on this, is not necessarily talking about the cultural side of it, but the legality of this and just setting a precedent for, because we do have other requests for return mm-hmm. after this. And so that's the concern that I have, is using this mechanism to go for through requests for return in other cases as well, rather than going through the process for help for us to kind of look through things and figure out what's being asked for and trying to figure out who has title to that, because that, so that's kind of my only other statement, and I apologize for interrupting you.
Any more questions? Trustee, do you have any?
Well, once you have these policies that you talked about, will that solve this problem? I mean, will it be a way for you to decide yourself?
Yeah. And it we have a committee, so it's not just me making the decision. It's a committee of people, and what my part in it is that I do the research on it and try to find the documentation that either establishes or does not establish title to those items, and then I'll work with the Attorney General's office for the legality of that. I'm not an attorney, but again, the section on page 8 does directly bring up requests for return of collection objects and gives a very detailed kind of procedure for that. And then there's also an appendix in the back, which is Oklahoma Museum Association's guidelines on undocumented, found in collections, doorstep donations, and requests for return. And kind of those are legal designations for all of those types of items and collections. So this is how frequently these kinds of things come up, is that the Oklahoma Museum Association has published a paper about how to handle them and how to go about them. And so this is a very well-established procedure. It's not something that we're just kind of pulling from, but it's something that that I've been trained in and I know how to do. So that's kind of how the collection management policy will address that.
Well, and did I hear you say that although they're asking for everything, she specifically wants just a diary or the diaries or
yes, there's a box, and I'm very familiar with those because we had
box.
Well, the only ones I found is one big box, and so things may have been rehoused as the collection had been purchased and moved around, and I continue to look for the rest of it, but we do have a whole big room, and right now we don't have space in our temporary spot to just get everything out, because then you can't move in the building, but and it's about probably 60 to 80 of these tiny little leather bound, and they're about that big on average with a string around them. And they're kind of logs of Mr. Samuel Chakota, what he did that day, who he talked to, kind of his service in the church, just even he'll say bought milk, you know, and things like that. The thing that we do provide is public access to these, and that's what I told Ms. Chakota as well, too, is they've said, these are not mine, these belong to the Muscogee people, and it's my job to provide access to them as quickly as we can. So she has come several times and viewed them. The problem with digitizing them is that you can't just stick them on a flatbed scanner, because you will damage them, the nature of the way that they're bound and everything like that. You could really damage them pushing them down. So we would have to take individual photos of each of the pages, and with that many pages, it's going to take a very long time. And so I had also told her that too, is I would try my hardest, but it is going to take a long, long time even to just organize those digital files to get them to her on that. And so I am familiar with that. that part of that collection. So some of them, again, do have documentation that we very well can establish, and then some of them, they're in the catalog, but there's no donor information on them. And so those are things that we would have to look into more. Again, I'm still looking for the old folders that might have deeds of gift or any sort of accession documentation information. But in the 30s, that didn't exist. And so it would have been those little card catalogs that they would have had that document that.
The last thing I want to ask is the heirship. You mm-hmm. talked about two sons. Mm-hmm. Is that the heirs that you're talking about? Or
that's Mary Ann's sons.
So is there anybody else?
No.
Just those two?
When you're talking about Samuel Chakotay, though, there are other heirs, and they are talked about in those diaries, too. And so that's kind of, when you talk about those things, it has to stem from those heirs as well. And, of course, he was alive a very long time ago. He had two families, and there are other heirs there. And I actually just met one last week. She wanted to come in and talk about something totally unrelated. So, and of course, the Chakotay family is a very, very large family, as I understand. So,
Dale,
this is a really interesting and pretty hard subject to talk about mm-hmm. because it's a very emotional topic, and when you have emotions involved, you know, you might think what is proper on one side is not proper as far as. What does policy say? Mm-hmm. And so I understand Ms. Chakotay's side. I've talked to her before, and I have no doubt that how she feels about these items and wants them back. But on one hand, I have to do what's right as far as what the tribe says and uphold the law part and make sure that. If she has a rightful claim to them, that we just go through the proper procedures. So I realize that, and I know, you know, time is maybe of the essence. I don't know, but I still don't think that circumvents how to do it properly and through the policies and procedures. But I feel that if we maybe just have another month, you know, maybe we can cross-reference what she wants to what's in that card catalog. And define, was it loan, was it donated, maybe it's undocumented, and then go from there, what can be given back to her properly. But I just feel that we have to do it the proper way. And I know that there is a feeling of urgency because she's in a nursing home. But I still feel that I have to go about the proper procedural way. And it's like I said, when you're dealing with emotions, though, sometimes you know whoever's on the emotional side feels that their emotions supersedes what procedure is. But I feel with the new policies and procedures that are we passed on to council tonight, it outlines things in a better way for us. So maybe we can just have things clearer, how to give stuff back to the rightful owner. But it is very difficult situation for the tribe and for the family. But I would have to side with the tribe on this because it's I think overall in the bigger picture it's what's best for the tribe. Thank you.
Two things I'd like to say. Her father. Mary Ann's father gave, he's the namesake of Grandfather Samuel Chakotay, great-great-grandfather, and he gave her possession of these. I don't know if that was the proper way, but he had possession of them. He gave her possession of them. That's when she took them to the camp house. He died in 1950, I believe. And then things, you know, didn't work out, and they were scared things were going to come out totally missing, so that's when they were transferred to the council house for safekeeping. The other thing I asked is Tribal Resolution 17008. If that's passed Saturday, would that make it even harder for her to try to get these things back? And is this something that came to be because of this situation?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I'd like to speak to that. So Veronica has been working for the Cultural Center of Arcos for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And immediately whenever we purchased the items from CIMA, first thing we do is, well, I was working in the department at that time, was recommended to hiring Veronica to come over and manage the collection. And they did not have a collection management policy at that time. I had not been working in the department all that long whenever we brought Veronica in. And the first thing that she did was she put together this collection management policy. We did establish a collection advisory committee at that time. It has been active. It's been actively meeting. We've actually accessioned items in. So the committee itself voted, and we have the documentation on this, is that we voted to approve collection management policy in a
April this year. But we had, can I?
Go ahead.
The first draft of this, I think, was done in March of 2015, because this is these are kind of foundational documents for any museum. This is one of the main things that you have to have, is care and a collection management policy and care and use of the collection. So, you know, this is something that I've been trying to do, and this is one of the things that I'm really passionate about, because I do understand these are people's treasures, and we certainly don't want to do anything unethical or to treat things in a disrespectful manner. That's why these things exist, is very much so to ensure that they're being treated in such a way that's respectful and respects the dignity of these things and the families that they represent. And so that's my passion, is collections and things like this. And so we do definitely understand this, but this has been in use for quite a while now. And we have meeting minutes where we did vote to send it to the AG's office for review in April, because we kind of toyed with it and kind of figured out for a year after I drafted it just how, if we needed to make some revisions, because my training is in nonprofit museums outside of tribes, and so kind of figuring out the administrative structure here at the Muscogee Creek Nation was my main goal in waiting to send this to the AG, but it did get sent over, I think, in April. So.
Thank you.
Yes.
So, you've worked here for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Are you the only one that goes through the collection to catalog it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you still don't know everything that's in the collection?
We have a basic inventory of what's in there, but in terms of a very detailed inventory where we've taken things out and done things like that, I had recommended not to do that because we were in a temporary space, and because of the deterioration of some of the items, handling them and taking them in and out of the boxes really poses a risk for damaging them further. And so we did have people come in and help me do an inventory that says, we opened a box and we lifted things up and noted what was in it, you know, on a basic level, but we did not pull them out. We didn't handle them. We tried to be as least invasive as possible with these items, just because we do have things from Tugabuchi Mound, you know, from 1100 AD in there. And I'm sure that those things would be damaged if we really move things around, and so I'm very hesitant to even pull the boxes off the shelf any more than we already are, to just kind of make space on the shelf for things at this time as a preservation measure. But we are actively seeking funding for permanent collection storage. We've hired, along with the 501c3, the Muscogee Historic and Cultural Foundation, a fundraiser to actively go after funding for capital projects so that we can have a permanent collection storage there. So
these items are still at Riverwalk? So is it, I realize you have to have a policy, you have to have policies and procedures, but is it premature before you even know what you have there? Before we go about deciding whether or not to give these items back, we don't even know what we have or what we don't have. It's just our word against theirs as to what we're supposed to have, or?
Yes, go ahead.
Whenever we took over the collection from CIMA, we also took over their collection management database. So we actually migrated all the data from the CIMA into our own database. It's called PassPerfect. And what we've done is statistically, you can go in and spot check and pull an item randomly from PassPerfect and then go check against the inventory. And that's been done. And so we know that with a
high statistical probability that we have all the items that are listed in past perfect. We know exactly what we have in the collection. Are there items in there that may have fallen through the cracks over time, added or lost? It's probably less than 1%. I mean, there's collection management policies and techniques that you can verify what you have, and Veronica's done that. The items are, she has rigged up a system to maintain the humidity at a certain level. She checks that every day. The items are housed in a proper way and being cared for in a proper way, and probably cared for better than they ever have been. The CIMA did not maintain proper humidities and other controls, pest management practices, etc., and damage by light, all these different things that Veronica has taken consideration. So from a collections management and care, I mean, they are being well cared for. Is it an ideal space? It's probably less than ideal, but I think that's the challenges that we have. You know, we've only had the collection for 2 to 3 years, and we are moving forward with plans to develop a long-term solution to that.
Chairman?
Yes,
I just have one more. And I guess it's just getting down to the nitty-gritty, the specifics. To look for a median, I'd like to see the request from Ms. Eads, specifically what she wants.
Gotcha.
Match it up with what you all have. If you have a card that says that was donated by so-and-so, so we can't return that to you, you know, I understand. But if it's not documented that way and there's specific things that she would like to have returned and there's no explanation for them, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's, I would ask for some time to be able to do that. Let's just match up with her request and how these things came in to where they're at now. Does that make sense
yes,
to everyone?
Yes. Yes, go ahead.
I don't think she exactly knows what all is there. She just knows there was about 5 to 8 boxes at one time. Each time she comes down, and I don't know if she's done it with you, but she said she goes in and reads some of the materials, you know, and tries to read, but she was kind of afraid that some things might be taken out of this box and put over here for some reason of organizing and be failed to get back where it came from, you know.
I think we're left with specifics, though, because right now she has a list, but it's not exactly specific. And they have cards, and that may not even match up with what she's asking.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
That is
we have cards for very specific individual pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, this is a Chief Samuel Chakotay oil painting from 1867. It has a brown wood frame. It says the donor's the museum on that one.
So, do you still have that?
As far as I know, it's in our catalog, but again, the framed objects especially are very subject to mm-hmm. damage when you pull them in and out of those boxes. So
she talked about a big picture with a young man.
With hound dogs,
yeah.
And I've got a card here that very much specifically talks, it says it's with two hound dogs or something like that. Yeah. Samuel Chakotay boy with hound dogs, and the donor is the Chakotay family. And it was donated, it doesn't specify the donation date, but the card's dated 1957. And so, when there's loans, because mm-hmm. there are loans in this card system, and these have not all been put into the digital system that we have, this digital collection management system. Some of them have by the council house when it was owned by the city. I think they had done some of it because these are obviously very old. But we do need to do the work of putting these in, but that does take a long time to just input everything by hand, so that it's searchable. I can scan them in, but then they won't be searchable when I do a search in the collection database. And so that's kind of where we're at on that, is the very specific things here, and the loans are very much, they say loan in mm-hmm. big letters or in the back of the card, which none of these do say these are loans by so-and-so and they must be returned if they're not on display or things like that. So,
mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yes, Mark.
Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to postpone for a month.
Okay, motion's been made to postpone for our next meeting in February.
Second.
Mark Randolph, seconded by Dale Beaver. Any discussion on that? Yes.
For what reason would that be? I mean, just like that. So we more time, like, more
try, yeah, okay. And more or less match up with her specific request. With now that we know that they have these index cards and that, you know, they state whether they're donated, loaned, or, you know, whatever, that we can be sure that we've researched every possible way that we could. Because I have a feeling right now, if it was, we try to press it through, that it's just going to get buried. So maybe if we could give it one more month, maybe we can come to some happy medium.
But again, was that TR 17-0080 to make it more difficult then? I mean, I'm trying to understand.
Yeah.
It's another discussion.
Motion
made to postpone. Roll call vote.
Mark Randolph?
Yes.
Del Beaver?
Yes.
Thomas Rahala?
Yes.
Chairman, I got 3 in favor, 0 against.
3 in favor, 0 against. That motion passed to postpone till February's meeting.
Thank you.
Next item we have is TR 17-014, Tribal Resolution of Muskogee Nation, authorizing the Principal Chief to execute formal apology documentation between the Muskogee Creek Nation and the United States Forest Service Southern Region regarding the adverse effect to the Trail of Tears National Historic Trail located in Cherokee National Forest in Monroe County, Tennessee. Sponsor is Mitch Jack.
Make a motion due pass.
Motion for a due pass by Joe Beaver.
Second.
Seconded by Mark Randolph. Discussion?
Yes. Chairman, do we have anybody here to talk about this? Oh, there's anyway.
We were notified by the Forest Service in the Southern Region, which is the southeastern part of the United States, that there was an adverse effect by the Forest Service on the Trail of Tears that crossed through Tennessee. The Cherokee National Forest, it's on the northeastern side of Tennessee. It's about 45 minutes from North Carolina border. What happened was they said that they were acquiring a new piece of land and they wanted to evaluate it, and then a hydrologist said that there was too much erosion going on, and they decided to do some measures to prevent erosion from happening. And what they did was they dug these tank traps, some the size of 3 feet deep to 5 feet deep, all along the trail. And they didn't do any NEPA or National Historic Preservation Act or notify tribes before they did this work. And when they discovered the damage, they notified the tribe saying, "We apologize, we didn't know that this happened. What can we do with the tribes to work to fix this problem?" And so basically we were notified last fall that this damage happened. And over the course of the last year, we've had 4 different consultations. 10 tribes are involved in this, trying to mitigate the damage that occurred by the Forest Service in the area. And what they're proposing now is that at the Tabridge Gap meeting, which is going to be hosted by the Cherokee Nation next month in February, they'd like Chief Floyd to come and participate in a formal signing resolution saying the Forest Service is sorry that this happened. And so that's the basic part of the resolution.
Any questions? No questions? Roll call vote.
Mark Randolph?
Yes.
Del Beaver?
Yes.
Chairman, 2 in favor, 0 against.
2 in favor, 0 against. That motion passes. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Next item we have is NCA 17-004, a law of the Muskogee Creek Nation authorizing an appropriation of funds for the purchase of an undivided interest in 2 tracts of trust property located in Hughes County, Oklahoma. Sponsors Del Beaver.
Chairman, I make a motion to due pass.
Motion for due pass by Del Beaver.
Second.
Seconded by Mark Randolph. Discussion?
Chairman?
Yes.
We have anybody to speak on this?
Yes,
sir. I think it's, you're in 005. We're on 004.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jump the gun a little bit.
Chairman, I can speak on just a little bit on this. When I first read the legislation, I was under the impression that we're getting two tracts of land, basically 5.5 acres apiece.
Mm-hmm.
But when I started reading the legislation a little bit more, if you turn to the back page, not where the maps are, but where it says Lamar News, under legal notice, at the bottom, the sale of property description, it says an undivided 3/27th interest in 5.6 acres, and then undivided 1/3 interest in 5.6 acres. So basically we're, so then I thought, are we just getting 3/27ths of 5 acres or 5.5 acres and 1/3 of 5.5 acres? And so I contacted Ms. McIntosh over at Realty, and she was going to check with the BIA and today, because I just contacted her last night, and had not heard from her by this evening. But is there anybody that can speak to exactly what are we purchasing?
Yes.
Well, I don't know that I can speak conclusively. Our office drafted the legislation, but my understanding is it's 3/27ths interest in each of those 5.62 and 5.63 acre properties. So it's not the whole 5.6 acres. It's a 3/27ths interest in in the 5.62 acre piece of property. Does that make sense?
So it's like a less than an acre, like a point?
Yeah, that's my understanding. And I think the wording is a little confusing, but I don't know that is entirely correct. But my understanding is, yes, it is the 3/27ths interest.
But it's undivided interest, so.
Right, so it's maxed out in 27 squares.
Yeah, so we don't know what part we're getting.
Right.
So why are we doing this?
That I cannot speak to.
I mean, it's kind of, Chris, he said that, he's going to be right. Can't figure out that. But this would go automatically into trust. This is trust property. Uh-huh. It's going to be USA and trust once it's transferred. And then there is plans to for the other portions of it as well.
Hmm.
We're talking about the.
Generally, it's just anti-fractionation. So these are probably, I would imagine, probably is at risk of going out of trust. Mm-hmm. And normally at that point, they're offered, if there's no heirs or they offer it for sale, the tribe, for any person that owns it is a member, gets the chance to buy it so that it doesn't pass into being non-native land, potentially.
And then we can do like a mandatory trust acquisition later on, but with us being a fractionated interest owner of this larger property, so we are going to be an heir to some of the other ancillary property that's existing out there.
And that way when the tribe is a partial owner, we have a better chance of becoming the full owner at some point, and
right.
Making sure it stays trust property, stays
right.
In the Indian land rather than passing out of Indian title.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so we're getting, what's the total acres that we're actually getting a interest in, I guess I should say?
Well, we're getting the interest in that 5.62 and that 5.63.
But it's fractionated.
That's 10, 11 something acres.
And there's one of the interests we're going to be an heir on, so we'll be the majority interest owner on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some fee property also that we're going to be an heir on as well. So that allows us to do some things with the mandatory trust acquisition process and the nation being a fractionated interest owner in that. And I think it's a Realty, and if you talk to the realty professionals, it's their desire in things strategically is for us to go in and identify these properties that have fractionated interest. And if it becomes available and it's in trust or restricted status, then we, the nation, go in and take that, be able to preserve the nation's land base at that. By doing that, I think some of the other tribes have been doing that strategically as well.
So is that the biggest positive to the tribe, is that we're just increasing our land base?
Pretty much, yeah. And it's tax-free, so it would still, that property, we wouldn't be paying taxes on it, I'm pretty sure. Is that
because it's interested in or paying
right.
Yeah.
Okay, is there any royalties on that most land?
No, this doesn't include the minerals.
It's less
surface housing.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thomas.
Has anyone looked at this property?
The realty office has.
Yeah. What was their conclusion?
The recommendation was for us to proceed, and that's why we went for the option. I think it's kin somehow to Edwin Marshall's family, I believe.
That's right. He's part of that family.
Yeah.
And, you know, in transactions as such, just for myself, I like to see documentation showing who the heirs are in a particular tract of land, how much interest that they own.
Right.
And I don't see that here. I only see that 3 over 27, which is Aggie Beaver, I think,
right,
is the one that is selling her part. And the question's been asked, you know, how did this come about? Did Aggie come to the nation and say, I want to sell my undivided interest, or what?
That was it, yeah.
Okay, now, isn't there supposed to be a buyback program, or has it ever been addressed? So
the buyback program has not rolled out to Oklahoma.
Pardon?
The buyback program has not come to Oklahoma for the nation at this time. This would be similar to the type of thing that we would pursue with the buyback program. The buyback program would probably be a little more strategic. The amount of funds available would be limited to the tribes in Oklahoma. So we'd identify maybe strategic properties that adjoin the nation's current land holdings, or maybe in strategic economic development locations, et cetera, or maybe around sensitive cultural sites that we have. So we would want to try to target those. That's in the works as well, so put together a strategic list, so we'll be ready for the buyback program. But this is in the same realm as basically the buyback program.
Then how is the nation going to utilize this track?
Basically, you know, I think if you look 40 years ago, I don't think people thought Glenville would be in the middle of Tulsa. You know, there's tracts of land and all across the territorial bounds of the Muskoka Creek Nation that maybe 30 years ago, no one ever thought they would be advantageous to own another property. And the future, sometimes you don't know what's going to come. And so I think us going out and identifying interest in land, that's not going to require us to incur any costs associated with it in terms of taxation. To get it for a fair market value at this time would be strategic. Sometimes there may be things going in that we don't know of, and we may be sitting pretty at a later time if we continue with our strategic approach to land acquisitions.
Okay. Thank you.
Any more questions? Yes.
I failed to hear. Did you answer Mr. Yehola's question about how this came about?
It came down to me from the realty department. I think Aggie Beaver had posted that there's a sale of a restricted property. And it's a sale through the realty, through the bureau, and then through our realty office. And we were the only bidder.
Thank you.
Right. Any more questions? Oh yes, go ahead.
Would it be more feasible to buy it all at one time instead of piecemeal?
I think we capitalize on the opportunities that come before us. I'd like to provide the committee some additional information in terms of the property that we're going to be inheriting, the nation itself, as a part of the probate that added to the decision in this. So I think that would be advantageous to the committee, but I was hoping Sonia would be here tonight, and she's did not come. But I think the assessment from the chief's office and us was that it would be very strategic for us to go ahead and purchase that, and even though we're not the full interest owner of the property, and what if we have the full information?
Okay, thank you.
More questions? Roll call vote.
Bill Beaver?
Yes.
Thomas Yehola?
Yes.
Mark Randolph?
Yes.
Chairman, 3 in favor, 0 against.
3 in favor, 0 against. That motion passes. Be forwarded to BF&J for funding. Next item we have is NCA 17-005, and I'll turn that over to Mark Randolph.
NCA 17-005, a law of Muscogee Creek Nation authorizing a donation to Hanna Public Works Authority, sponsor Gerald Proctor.
Motion for due pass.
Motion for due pass. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Beaver. Discussion?
Yes, well, I believe we have a couple of representatives from the Hanna Public Works Authority. James, you can come up here too.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. What this pertains to is in 1994, a pump lift station was put in to service homes, three homes on top of Talbert Mountain, what's referred to as Talbert Mountain. And that will be east or west?
Southwest.
Southwest of the Peach Grounds?
Yes.
Be southwest of the Peach Grounds. Right now, since it has been established, there is two more homes been added to it with another home under construction, or soon to be under construction, excuse me. Right now, the pump is to the point where it's spraying water continuously inside the pump house. The second pump isn't working. All the households up there, they are Creek Nation citizens. I'm not sure if you got a copy of it. I'm sure you did. You will see that a list has been done as to the project and the amounts of the supplies and the purchases that would be needed in order to repair this. And actually, it would be going beyond a repair. It would be actually replacing all the stuff, all the parts that's inside the pump house.
How many homes, sir?
Right now there's five, and there is another one. The land is being cleared for a home to be placed up there.
Questions?
I was wondering if you contacted the tribe about the construction that's going to be happening there to make sure that there's no cultural resources impacted.
This is land that was given to my grandmother through the land grants, and it's been handed down from generation to generation inside the family, and it's actually her granddaughter that is building the house on the property. It's her dad's property that he's deeded, that he's given to her prior, so she can move up there as well.
So it's all private land?
Yes.
Mr. Asbell.
I just want to ask one other question. Did you contact the Muskoka Nation, IHS Environmental regarding assistance on this?
No, sir, I did not.
They generally provide assistance in these types of situations would be either sanitary sewer or also water quality wells, those types of things, anything with the environmental. Mm-hmm. But y'all may know more information about that, but I didn't know if they would be willing to fund something of this nature.
Thank you.
Just to, just with my experience with IHS, they're more from the house, and I guess from where the main to the house, that's their more of their concern. And anything else is the county or the city's concern. That's the way I understood it. That's the way the IHS works. They're, whatever's the homeowner's responsible for, that's what they will help with.
Yep, that's me. Sorry, but you got me. Yes, I have visited with IHS in the past. I'm the water operator for the system, and do work closely with them a lot. I'm trying to think of his name. They just moved into Shawnee. Jeff Welsh. Yeah. They just moved into Shawnee a few months ago, and we've worked on some projects
some mainline extensions that IHS has funded. I spoke with him about this project a few times, and it's so far out by the time that they could actually come in and try to fund this project, this would be, there wouldn't be no, nothing left to, there would be no water up there at this, at those residences. And about 2 months ago, 3 months ago, I approached Dale and said, listen, we've got to do something. The one pump has been down since I took over 3 years ago, since I took the system. And the pump that we've been running off of started, the seals started leaking, and the control panels are shot. The plumbing is galvanized plumbing in there, and it's
rusted.
Pretty rough. Actually, we had a power failure a few weeks ago whenever I had to shut the system down to fix a line and start the system back up, and the main breaker panel inside the pump house melted down. And luckily, the electrician that we work with, in his good gracious heart, he flew down there that night. I told him what was going on. The next morning he came down and got it going so that we could keep going temporarily to service these homes to keep people some clean drinking water. But yeah, like I say, I've worked with IHS quite a bit, and Jeff, and they help a lot. I mean, they really do.
They're helping us a lot.
But as I think you spoke a little bit ago, one of y'all did, about the bureaucratic red tape going through the, with IHS, it takes so long to get all the steps done before you can actually get something done.
Because this really is an emergency situation. If these pumps, this pumps goes down, right now we don't have a way to, the funds to purchase the pump to replace it to get these people water again.
Any other questions, concerns? Roll call vote, please.
Darryl Proctor?
Yes.
Thomas Shahola?
Yes.
Del Beaver?
Yes.
Chairman, at 3 in favor, 0 against.
3 in favor, 0 against. NCA 17-005 passes. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate it.
It will be forwarded to BF&J for funding.
And then it'll be voted on by the full council.
Hey, do I need to be here for that?
Yes.
And what day is that?
It's a week from Saturday.
A week from Saturday?
Mm-hmm.
What time?
10 o'clock.
I will be here.
Back to you, Mr. Proctor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Randolph. Next item we have NCA 17-009, a law of the Creek Nation amending NCA Title 5, Subsection 2-105, entitled Funding Requests. Sponsor is Mark Randolph.
Motion to pass.
Motion for due pass by Mark Randolph.
Seconded
by Del Beaver. In discussion?
Chairman and committee, this is just, you know, at one time we talked about waiting to do the $170,000 again for the camp houses, but since then we've received calls over heating systems gone out. And so I talked with Alicia and she thought this would be the best way, is just setting aside the same amount we set last time. It'd be the same thing for, you know, one time offer only, and we'll just go through the money as we go. It's pretty much the same.
Any questions? No questions? Roll call vote.
Mark Randolph.
Yes.
Del Beaver.
Yes.
Thomas Shahola.
Yes.
Chairman, at 3 in favor, 0 against.
3 in favor, 0 against. That motion passes. Next we have is other business. Do you have any other business? No other business? Announcements? Are there any announcements? No announcements. Next is our adjournment, and then we'll have the benediction, but Dale, would you offer that? Yes. It's urgent.
Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, I just thank you for this beautiful day you've given us, Lord. Lord, thank you for just being with us, Lord, as we make the decisions for what's best for the nation, for the citizens, Lord. Lord, I just ask that you just be with us as we go home, Lord. Give us traveling grace, Lord. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.